is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. Here with me, as always, it's David Ramil. We don't have a recap. We're not doing a preview. So we thought because tomorrow night is the Heat's game against the Pacers, we're going to recap that game tomorrow. So we're not going to have an opportunity to talk about the December 15th unofficial kickoff to the trade season. So we figure we'll do that a couple of days early before the December 15th. So we're basically talking about the deadline, which is this Thursday on December 15th, when any free agent who signed in this offseason are now eligible to be traded. Because before this, they're not eligible. So now they are eligible. It really opens up, with all the contracts that moved around, it opens up so much of the league to be in trade talks, and in particular for the Miami Heat, it opens up 8 different players on this roster, right?
Yeah, and it really helps out with the ESPN trade machine, too. I mean, I know you're a big fan of it. Isn't it difficult, right? You go on there, and you know these players are going to be eligible to be traded in a week or two, but you can't actually make the deal go through until December 15th, and we're finally here. So it's for you trade machine aficionados, this is a big day.
So just for a personal touch, I've been using Chris Bosh's salary as a placeholder for Whiteside's salary in Trade Machine and nice. Trade Machining, because they're close enough that it's about $1 million difference, so it's close enough you can kind of guesstimate and figure it out. I won't have to do that, because Whiteside is one of those players on December 15th whose deal becomes tradable, and he signed a 5-year, $98 million contract this summer. He's making $22 million this year, a little bit more. So it's Whiteside is the big guy, right? That's the big name. And then there's other guys. There's Wayne Ellington, Derek Williams, Udonis Haslem, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Willie Reed, and Rodney Magruder. All of them signed deals this summer. Also, yes, Tyler Johnson did sign a restricted free agent deal this summer. But because of the way that the restricted free agency works and his contract is structured, he's not able to be traded until January 15th. So not December 15th, but January 15th. And for this year, he has a no-trade clause, which is interesting enough, just because of the way that contract works. He's got a no-trade clause.
Doesn't he and I believe Deion Waiters both have a trade kicker as well, that I guess 15% of their salary would be added if they're traded somewhere?
I believe so. And if anybody who doesn't follow Albert Random on Twitter, you might as well give him a shout-out here, because he does really good work on this, and he's pretty Heat-focused, even though he does tweet about the whole league, about the little nuances about this stuff, and I'm sure he'll be really involved. So go give him a follow on Twitter. Non-paid shout out there. But I did kind of want to just go dig into this and really just look at what's possible for the Heat and what maybe we'll think. Pat Riley's really not the kind of guy who is probably going to make a deal within this week of December 15th. He's not really a guy who makes deals early in the season. He typically, I think, likes to wait more towards the trade deadline. That's more of our experience if we've seen in the past with a guy like Goran Dragic. Now, even last year, they did trade guys like Mario Chalmers early in the season, Chris Anderson early in the season, but that was more to get under the luxury tax threshold. That's not an issue for the Heat this year, so I don't think we're going to see early trades. I think we're going to see, if we see a trade this year, something in January or February, but it's still interesting because there's so many guys that are being opened up to the trade market now to kind of talk about what's going to go on.
I think I did read that it's never happened in the 21 years of Riley's tenure here, so we can expect that, although this seems like a particularly big date, it's not likely to be an actual huge event as far as the front office is concerned. I don't think they're looking at this. And I wonder what the rationale behind that is, if whether or not they think that the extra month or two before the trade deadline is enough for a player to either increase their value, or whether or not you can get a better sense of if a team is losing elsewhere and maybe they're looking to move a disgruntled player, a la, you know, say, DeMarcus Cousins or somebody like that. You know, that's probably why they wait until the trade deadline comes around, because then you get a better gauge for who you can acquire, who's more willing to be moved in a trade, which is what happened with Goran Dragic a couple seasons ago.
I wonder if it's more a trend or more coincidence, though. We think back to that team that did trade for Dragic. That was a team that still that was the year after LeBron left. It's a team that still featured Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, some pieces that they felt good about at the time. And I wonder if – and Dragic, I don't know if he was disgruntled in the beginning of the season as he got – as so much as he got disgruntled towards the trade deadline. But you look at a guy like John Wall. There's already rumors and rumblings that he's unhappy in Washington. DeMarcus Cousins, that's been a long-standing drama. There's already big players who might be a little disgruntled. There might be other guys. There might be Paul George who by – you know, the beginning of February, he's like, you know what, I've had it in Indiana, I'm done. Right now, it's more of a what if, but maybe by then it's a, okay, these needs to be moved. And maybe that's why Riley likes to wait. I don't know if it is, I don't know if the reason Riley hasn't made a trade early is because that's a Riley thing, or if it's just pure coincidence that there just happened to not be the right deal in place then, and those deals happen to come into place near the trade deadline. Now, we've looking at the macro NBA, that deals do get done once there's a deadline. That's human nature. You tend to get things done when the deadline is looming. You're not really, you know, people tend to procrastinate. You're not going to get your homework done, you know, 3 months early, right? If you can wait, you're going to wait. And I think that might be some of it. I think there's also still analysis of the roster and really kind of looking at the pieces.
Right.
But if you're the Heat, we've got to talk about tanking. And it's easier to lose games now and start that trend of losing games now if you want to trade away a Dragic or a Whiteside or something like that, depending on the level of tanking that they hypothetically want to do, it makes sense to trade them now as opposed to the trade deadline, because one, you can lose more games by not having good players for 2 months, and two, these players have more value because they can make more of an impact to the receiving team when they're on the team for longer.
You know, I wonder about that, because I think I pointed out in a recent podcast that the kind of performances that we've seen from Dragic of late are a win-win for Miami, and that either in the short term they're helping Miami win more this season and they're helping, you know, bridge the gap until the roster is healthy, if that is ever the case, or two, it's doing nothing but increasing his trade value in the sense that, you know, obviously a player is going to put up big numbers even if a team is losing. But that still has some value when you're marketing or shopping him to another team as a potential trade partner. You know, you can say, look, he's averaging 20-something points in December and January. Clearly, he's peaking at just the right time if you're looking to make a playoff push, if you're one of these fringe playoff teams, or whether or not you're a playoff contender but not necessarily a title contender. It certainly helps to keep Dragic for as long as possible, in the sense that maybe you can possibly get more of a better value package in exchange for him if you do wind up looking to move him.
Well, we talked about Dragic and after that Washington Wizards game where he scores 34 points and he had his best game in a Heat career, and I kind of like half in jest, you know, titled the podcast, "You can't trade Goran Dragic when he plays like that." And of course, a few people point out that, well, he's got more trade value now. That was kind of like a wink, wink at the whole the tanking movement, you know. But that is absolutely true. Like, he does have more value now. And when he does play like that, you and I had talked about like the possibility of John Wall, and it did sound like we agreed on that podcast then that if Wall's traded, I don't know how willing the Wizards would be to trade him to the Heat in the division, and if the Heat would even be able to put the best package together. You know, you look at maybe a Dragic and Winslow built a package built around those two guys for Wall. It's like, why would the Wizards do that? Goran Dragic is 30 years old, and they have Otto Porter. You know, it's not like they have a young defensive first wing that they're kind of invested in. I don't know if that's the deal that they would want, if that's the strengths that they'd be trying to improve upon, or the weaknesses, rather, that they try to improve upon in that kind of trade. But either way, not to get too sidetracked, Dragic, with his play recently, has certainly increased his value, which kind of gets me to what I wanted to ask you. And we might as well start here. Whiteside is the big name. Dragic is the big name. Everything considered, tanking, not tanking, what this team can be, what it wants to be, all these things considered, what you and I think. Of those two guys, who do you think is more tradable? I'm not asking you who do you think gets traded. Who do you think has more value to the rest of the NBA?
Either Dragic or Whiteside?
Yes.
I think Whiteside's clearly the more desirable option of the two, simply because I think there are so many great quality starting point guards and even backups throughout the league, guys that could probably not necessarily match what Dragic's skill set is or his level of production, but could give you close enough so that, you know, he's not necessarily a great value over a replacement player. Whereas I think Whiteside still has the youth, offers elite level rim protection and rebounding, and theoretically you might not necessarily be as soured as all the perceived slights in his game that he has no motor, or B, you know, the actual things that he does wrong on the floor, like he doesn't set screens very well, or he doesn't necessarily have much of an offensive repertoire, those kinds of things. You might be willing to take a chance if you think that kind of elite level rim protection, I'm looking at you, Portland, you know, might be the kind of edge you need in order to put you above other teams in the Western Conference. So I would say Whiteside.
I'd agree with that. I want to make a case for Dragic. His contract is substantially less than Whiteside. He's a veteran presence who can walk in at that position, I think, and really change what a team wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And where you kind of point to Portland for Whiteside, I point to Denver for Goran Dragic. If Denver really wants to make a playoff run, or Sacramento, if they really want to make a playoff run, he's the sort of guy who can walk in and be much better than the player that they have. Because you said Dragic is probably just slightly better than a replacement level player. In Denver and in Sacramento, they don't even have replacement level point guards right now. It's that bad in those situations. So I think Dragic, in that respect, does have some value, and a team that you're not going to get as much back, I don't think, for Dragic as you would Whiteside, but he might be more tradable at this point. I don't know. I'm answering a couple different questions here, but it's a word.
No, I mean, Denver is a very unusual case. I mean, you look at what they did during the offseason. I don't think they went after any other big free agent names other than really Dwayne Wade, and that was a weird personnel move when you think of it from that perspective, because, you know, obviously they're kind of log jammed in the backcourt. They've got a number of players, even Emmanuel Mude, who, you know, starts at the point guard occasionally, can't play the two. He's been doing that alongside Jameer Nelson. And you know, you've got guys like Jamal Murray, a guy, I'm drawing a blank here as far as the other kid is concerned, but they've got a number of players there that fit that kind of two-guard mentality. They're tweeners in the sense that they're not particularly big or long or anything like that, but they do have – I think they're slotted to play the two-guard. So you wonder why they would have gone after a guy like Dwayne Wade, knowing that you've already got a logjam in the backcourt. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But
Will Barton and Gary Harris.
Yeah, there you go, Will Barton. Yeah, Will Barton, who's actually starting as well. So, I mean, it's a very, very unusual thing, because then you go after – you're not quite sure what the team or the front office philosophy is if you're going after a 33-year-old, 34-year-old veteran. Although, of course, as we've seen in Chicago, Wade does offer a lot, not just on the court but off, and there's also the Mike Miller factor to consider. He doesn't necessarily seem like he fits that time frame. But if you're looking at it from that perspective, then a guy like Dragic, you can come in there, provide immediate scoring – has you know, as much as you might not want to consider this, he does have a European connection to their two young stars in the center position, you know, a Jokic and Nurkic. So, I mean, there's something to be said there. You could stabilize that backcourt. You could slot Jameer Nelson back to the backup position where he probably would thrive best. And you know, if you give up on Mude a little bit sooner than you expected, that seems like a good value there. So, and they've also got, I'm looking at it right now, Gallinari is an upcoming free agent. And he's a player who's obviously suffered through a number of injuries over the course of his tenure with Denver. But I think you still want to hang on to. But I wonder if the deal maybe, look, they'd rather just move on and see if they can acquire a bigger name or something like that. I'm not quite sure.
Or bite the bullet on Kenneth Reed, right, and say, like, look, we're paying this guy. His contract is unmovable. We might as well start this dude at power forward, move Gallinari. Even though Gallinari plays small forward, he plays a lot of stretch four for him, so maybe it's a situation where you do try to sell high on Gallinari, get a guy back like Goran Dragic or something like that. Yeah, makes sense.
And or maybe
Gallinari could play stretch four in Miami. He would be a really good fit there.
Yeah, or maybe a player like you say, you know, maybe you say if you throw in Justice Winslow or something like that, it's somebody that we can slot in at the three. Although, I mean, that would kill their floor spacing because, I mean, that's something that obviously Kenneth Free doesn't help out with. Unless you were able to move him as well, and then you could start Jokic at the four, which is something I've heard they were considering there. So,
yeah, and Wilson Chandler. Nurkic is another – or Nurkic is a guy that they want to trade. I think Denver has some pieces that they can move. It's an intriguing trade partner.
I saw a tweet from Matt Moore a couple of weeks ago that was a really interesting one, that their players are neither too bad that you want to just like forego any chance of them developing while they're with the team, but not so good that you can actually move them for anything kind of valuable. So you're kind of stuck with these middling players that are either one-dimensional or not necessarily haven't realized their potential yet. And so you can't really say, oh, well, he's going to be a great player because you don't know what's going to happen with them. So it's a tough spot for them to be in. And it kind of keeps them in that middle ground in the Western Conference.
I'm going to build a trade really quick.
Excellent.
I want to ask you if you would take it. If you're the GM of Denver.
I'll do it.
All right. So I'm the Heat's GM. What's his face? I'm the new GM of the Miami Heat.
Nicky Arison? He's your vice president, right?
Oh, Andy Ellsberg, sorry.
Andy Ellsberg, okay.
Yeah, I'm Andy Ellsberg. And I'm building a trade. I'm going to call you, the GM of the Denver Nuggets. All right?
Okay.
So just give me a second here while I open up the trade machine and kind of play around. Listeners, patiently wait. So I'm going to ask for this guy. Let's see if you'll bite on him. I want to throw in this guy. And this guy.
Ooh. I'm looking at some of these names here. They're interesting. Otto Porter, like you mentioned earlier, he's actually also going to be entering into restricted free agency. So that's an interesting option there as well. He's having a really good year in Washington.
All right. I don't know how much I love this deal. I don't think I do. All right.
But, you don't want to admit that to an opposing GM, but that's a bad way to enter negotiations.
Right. So I don't love this, but hear me out. You know what? Okay. This is not going to work because there's no way you're going to accept it. Don't worry about it. Oh, you know what?
I want to hear
Here's
it.
The
I
thing about
this.
Denver. We don't have to match contracts. Here's the other thing about Denver. I remember looking at this. Denver's got almost $19 million in cap room, so you don't have to worry about matching contracts. So how about this? Okay. I'm going to hit you with this deal. All right.
All right.
Goran Dragic, you get your starting point guard. You flesh out the rest of your roster. Now that you have a starting point guard, you can let these other guys develop. He's on a four-year deal that is, against the market, extremely valuable compared to these other point guards of his caliber, what they're being signed at this summer and next summer.
Okay.
Emmanuel Mudiay is clearly not working out for you.
All right.
We'll take Emmanuel Mudiay. And as a project, and we want Will Barton back in return as well. And
so for Mudiay and Will Barton, you want Goran Dragic?
No, you want Goran Dragic.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. You want to ship us? You want to send us Denver Goran Dragic in exchange for Will Barton and Emmanuel Mudiay?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't finish my trade. I didn't finish my deal here.
And, there's more?
Oh yes, you're also going to send us your first round pick.
Ooh, first round pick, considering we're likely headed for the lottery this year.
That's right. We're willing to protect it. Top seven. Ooh. Top seven protected this year, unprotected the year after if you're in the top seven this year.
Would you throw in Josh Richardson as well?
No. Why do you need Josh Richardson? You've got Jamal Murray, you've got Gary Harris, you've got Malik Beasley, who you like, just wasting away on the bench. You know, you don't want anything to do with Josh Richardson. That'll just crowd up your backcourt.
How about Josh McRoberts? You want to throw in McRoberts there? He's shown some promise of late. I think his versatility.
Absolutely not. He made a running at the power forward belt. He's untouchable. Heat fans are like turning this thing off, like, no, you have an opportunity to get rid of McRoberts, do it, pull the trigger. Yeah, you could take, if McRoberts will put this thing over the edge, then yes, I'll throw McRoberts in there.
McRoberts, Dragic, and Magruder for...
Who put Magruder in there?
I just did.
No.
For a first round pick. Yeah, he's the exchange for the first round pick. I think I want a guy like Magruder who brings a lot of hustle. As Mike Malone, I think he would love coaching a guy like Magruder. You throw Magruder there and I'll take McRoberts.
The pick's unprotected then.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, so for Goran Dragic, Roddy Magruder, and Josh McRoberts, you'll give me Will Barton, Emmanuel Mudiay, and an unprotected first round pick?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because I think with the addition of Dragic, we'd probably close in on the eighth seed there. So that pick's not going to be much of a value anyway. I don't see why not.
Yeah. So in this situation, then, the Heat would probably be starting either Mudiay or Tyler Johnson at point guard or Deion Waiters. Oof,
that's brutal.
Or Deion Waiters. Mudiay is a backup guard, I think, off the bench. Probably playing more shooting guard. I think Moutier's future is not a point guard. He might be more of a combo guard like Marcus Smart in Boston. So I think if you look at him that way and stop asking him to do so much, I think he's going to have a lot of value in return. Will Barton's a nice scorer. He's a little slight, but with the Heat wanting to go small and pick up the pace, I think it works, and that first round pick could be pretty valuable. If Denver, you're banking on the idea that Denver falls, that they try to make that push, but they're still not able to do it. They're not able to put the pieces all together in time. They still have too much going on in that front court of things that just don't work in that front court, that they miss out on the playoffs, and you end up getting a really nice pick out of it. Okay. Interesting. All
right. Yeah, I think it works. I mean, I think having Dragic on that kind of valuable contract, especially, again, because he would really help out there. I think with the pace that he brings there, it works so well. Could you imagine trying to adjust to Denver's high altitude and having to deal with a guy like Dragic who just won't quit, you know, for 48 minutes? I mean, I think that would be potentially lethal there for opposing point guards. So I think it would work out really well. You know, I look at Mudiay sometimes, and I know you've seen him a little bit, not as much maybe as I have for whatever reason, but I know this is probably going to sound blasphemous, but there are shades to me of Dwayne Wade.
Oh,
there.
Boy. Go on.
If only for the sense that I think he's got really elite level athleticism, and like his length is superior, obviously. He can do some really fantastic things as a ball handler, but then he can do some really boneheaded ones. And I know a lot of people want to forget this part of him, but you know, there were those moments as a rookie and even early on in his career where he just didn't know how to handle the position. Remember, they were trying to incorporate him at point guard and they didn't really settle for the shooting guard position because they had Eddie Jones there until, you know, later on in that first season and second season. But, you know, he had the tendency of going up in the air and not being able to find a teammate and turning over the ball a whole heck of a lot. And I see a lot of that in Mudiay, in that, you know, his teammates don't know how to play with a guy of his speed or tempo, or they don't have a feel for his timing, and he doesn't have a feel for theirs. And so it's very difficult. Like, there's a lot of times where you see him and he drives to the hoop, he gets past the defender, but he looks to dish to somebody, and unfortunately there's nobody there, so it won't result in a turnover. So of course that leaves Nuggets fans frustrated as hell. And a lot of people wondering whether or not he has the potential to ever develop into a full-time point guard. But there's potential there. I mean, again, I think his passing, his scoring can all be great. I think he's got the right size.
So you like this deal? Then you like this deal for Miami then?
I do, actually. I do, because I think it fits more along that time on the table that they're looking at right now. And I think he's going to have the potential to be a really good player at some point in his career. I might be dead wrong, but I think it works.
And what happens here, by the way, is what I want to note. If you're a Dragic supporter, which we are on this show, we like Dragic. We've said in the past, we're not rooting for Dragic to get traded. And if he does get traded, it's a situation we're going to be rooting for him anyway, wherever he goes. But as long as it's not like, you know, Boston or something. But it's – okay, so – all right. Here's the second part of that trade. Do you want to do this again?
Let's try it.
Okay. Here's the second part of that trade because Mudiay, you're right. I don't know what he is. He might be a point guard. He might be a shooting guard, combo guard. I don't know. There's a big hole right now at point guard. How are we going to solve that? Here's the next part of that trade. Oh, what I wanted to say, by the way. By trading Dragic, you're also increasing the value of Miami's pick this year. because that make there's a much better chance by doing that trade, there is a much better chance that the Heat end up with a top three pick in this year's draft if you make that deal. So not only are you getting that those future assets in return and an additional first-round pick, but you're also increasing the value of your own draft pick. That needs to be at least considered here. So here's the second part of that deal.
Okay.
Hassan Whiteside for C.J. McCollum and Myers Leonard. To Portland.
We've talked about that. We've talked about before.
It. So that's the second part of the deal, right? So you get C.J. McCollum, and you bring him in at point guard. So the now point you guard. Have the, I play C.J. McCollum at point guard. Absolutely. That's what he played at Lehigh. Not a lot of people know that because not a lot of people know that Lehigh is a college. So that's what he played at Lehigh. He does handle the ball quite a bit when Damian Lillard isn't. I know a lot of Heat fans. I proposed this trade on Twitter. I got a lot of. I thought it was very polarizing in the way that people were like, why wouldn't the Heat do that trade? And then a lot of people were like, why would the Heat do that trade? So it really depends on how much of Portland you watch. I don't think it has anything to do with how much you watch what you think of CJ McCollum. I don't think a lot of Heat fans are watching Portland, and that's fine. Like,
right.
That's okay. Most people don't subscribe to League Pass and don't stay up until 1:30 in the morning watching NBA basketball. But I implore you, if you want to totally geek out like David and I do about the Miami Heat and think about completely useless things like this entire podcast, then I implore you just find a night, watch Portland. I think they play Thursday night. Go ahead, watch Portland. Watch CJ McCollum. When Lillard's not in the game, McCollum's the point guard, and he's got a knack for it. A lot of people think that Portland backcourt of Lillard and McCollum has a ceiling, especially defensively, and if that backcourt has a defensive ceiling, that team overall has a defensive ceiling. I'm not sure I completely buy into that, but there's mounting evidence to suggest that that's true. Okay. And they certainly have a huge hole defensively in rim protection. And Whiteside fixes – and rebounding. Whiteside fixes so many of their problems. You get rid of McCollum, they have plenty of backfill. Allen Crabbe, Evan Turner – they have plenty of guys that can play that position. A name that Heat fans might remember, Shabazz Napier, having a good season off the bench for them. Plenty of backfill. So you get McCollum, play him at point guard, and say you end up with the first pick in the draft and you get Markelle Fultz. You can always just move McCollum back to shooting guard. And Fultz is projected as a strong defensive point guard. So you don't have that same issue that Portland has with two below average defensive guards.
Now, could we swing this into a three-way trade where Barton goes to Portland in exchange for, say, Festus Ezeli, perhaps?
So you would be getting Ezeli,
Myers Leonard,
and McCollum.
And McCollum, along with Moutier.
So you don't like Barton?
I don't. I don't know. I know he's had some solid production there, but I think he's more of a scorer. I don't necessarily like his defensive tenacity there, and I don't know that he's necessarily going to fit into Miami's culture either.
Do you like Gary Harris more than him?
I do for now.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that we could do that. Yeah.
Nice. All right, that's a good deal, because then you wind up getting a guy who's hurt this year, but, you know, we saw that it worked in Philadelphia. Why would it work in Miami?
Will Barton played for Portland.
There you go.
They might want him back.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. Especially if they lose McCollum.
Yeah, if he's got a familiarity with Terry Stotts, I'm sure it would work out pretty well for him.
Right, so. And they don't need I like this deal. I like where your head is at because they don't need Ezeli. They have Whiteside. They wanted Whiteside in the first place. They didn't get him, so they signed Ezeli. And yeah, that makes sense. So now we have probably Leonard's the starting center. Ezeli is the backup. Maybe he gets healthy one day. McCollum. Richardson at shooting guard. Moutier coming off the bench as a combo guard, as well as Tyler Johnson. And then you have Winslow at whatever, stretch four, James Johnson coming off the bench. And then you have maybe like Josh Richardson and Wayne Ellington starting, or Josh Richardson and Deion Waiters starting, or something like to that effect. But you have now you have that roster. So McCollum, Richardson, Wayne Ellington, Winslow, and Leonard as starters, let's just say. Myers Leonard.
With and Johnson, I know you look Daniel at it.
Moutier, James Johnson, Festus Ezeli coming off the bench, and two picks. One that's probably going to be a top five, if not top three, if not the first pick overall, and one that's going to be somewhere either in the late teen or in the mid-teens somewhere from Denver.
Right.
So you have two first-round picks to work with now.
I mean, look, I know for a guy like Riley who wants to keep that kind of financial flexibility and lower the salary cap as much as possible, this deal would never be something that he'd consider, because I think McCollum's already signed an extension. Azeeley has a contract for the next 2-3 years, I think.
2 years.
Yeah, so I don't think he'd go for a deal like that. But, I mean, to me, you've suddenly gone younger, cheaper, potentially more dangerous, and still retained a whole heck of a lot of flexibility there.
I think you can maintain – I think this does maintain flexibility, because now – and this is not something we talked about yet on this podcast – but you get Chris Bosch's contract potentially off the books on February 9th. That unto itself is room for a max level deal. And by the Heat trading Dragic with minimal salary in return, there's actually an opportunity if you do this deal and trading Whiteside's salary. McCollum, yeah, you're right. He signed an extension already. But by trading your top three getting rid of your top three contracts, if the Bosch thing takes, you're only taking one almost max level contract back in McCollum. You have an opportunity here to sign another max level player in addition to all those things.
Gordon Hayward.
Biscayne Bayward. That could work.
I think it would be great.
All right. So I think before we wrap this thing up, we looked at the Heat a lot. The other guys we talked about earlier, Wayne Ellington, Derek Williams, Haslam, James Johnson, Waiters, Willie Reed, Rodney McGruder. I don't see them actively shopping any of those guys, but they could be potentially throw-ins, and that's really the legitimate – that's the important part here, is that now all of a sudden Miami has 8 of their roster guys to work in these trades, right? Before it was just the 7. So now,
by the way, really just friend of the program,
trade Bosch.
Friend of the program, Anthony Chang, with a nice piece earlier today for the Palm Beach Post on James Johnson, claiming that he's really tapped into his potential here in Miami. That the front office and the coaching staff really helped him get in the best shape of his career. I think he lost something like 25 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. Got to 8% body fat, and that's really contributed to his resurgence here in South Florida, and that he does intend to close out his career there. He wants to stay around and be part of this rebuilding process. So good news. We've talked about it on a number of occasions. We'd like for him to stay, and hopefully if he continues that mindset and is willing to take a much more affordable deal than we expected he'll get in the free agent market, he could be a potential long-term addition for Miami. So that's great.
Or if they're able to clear Bosch, just give him that money. I'm kidding. All right,
I know you are.
I can hear the listeners yelling at me already. They'd hate them. So that was the significance there. And before we started recording, we took a quick look around the league about other guys who can come off. And so a team that we already talked about, Portland, guys like Alan Crabb, Evan Turner, and then two guys we already talked about, Myers Leonard and Festus Ezeli, they're able to be traded on December 15th. So it's notable for that reason. A team like Dallas, who could be in the market to trade guys. Harrison Barnes? Are they saying, this didn't work and we want to tank? Maybe they trade Barnes. In Orlando, Bismack Biyombo and Jeff Green. I don't think I don't know why I wrote Jeff Green down. I don't want anything to do with him. And in Sacramento, a team that has had ties with Miami in trade talks, in trade rumors. These are inconsequential players, but nonetheless have salaries that might be able to make a deal work. Aaron Aflalo, who I think might be the worst player on the Sacramento Kings this season, and Anthony Tolliver, who's a fine stretch four type guy. Inconsequential players, but guys whose contracts could make a deal work salary-wise. So just thought that it was worth throwing them in there.
Also worth noting, I'm trying to think, and I think we talked about this a long time ago, but it's something that we've noticed more often in the league nowadays. Obviously – people in front offices across the league want to trade with other front offices that they're familiar with and have longstanding connections with. The teams that Miami has traded with the most often, I think Charlotte, despite the fact that they're a division rival, they've made several deals with them in the past. Also Memphis, I think there's a connection there to Chris Wallace. I think that there's a potential trade option
and
there.
And only more now with Fizdale over there. So
correct. Yeah. So there are – I think those are the teams that you look at. I think they've made trades in the past with Dallas, but I'm not sure if that's happened during the Mark Cuban era. So I wouldn't suspect that they're an option. I think that's it. Maybe New Orleans when they moved. Yes. Did they move Norris Cole there? Yeah. So I think that's another potential option there. But I don't know that New Orleans has anything of value unless they're going to look to unload Jrue Holiday or something. Like that.
Phoenix with the whole
Phoenix, right? Yeah. That's a good deal.
And Wasn't Detroit in one of those, like, a third team in those deals? Like, and Van Gundy is there. I don't know if that makes any difference.
Maybe.
I feel
maybe.
Like Detroit was involved as a third team just in situation. But you're right. Those are, like, the core.
I know they traded to Orlando for the Shabazz Napier deal, but that's about it.
Yeah. So, Memphis, do they have anybody that they signed? Chandler Parsons?
I mean, I know we talked about him as a potential free agent, and he'd be a great fit here, but I think those injury concerns I think that scares everybody off. I can't see them willing to move there.
And, of course, Mike Conley, but they're not going to part with Mike Conley. But he signed, but that doesn't count. All right. Well, this is a good little rundown on what could happen December 15th and so on. So December 15th, again, the day where free agents who signed this offseason are eligible to be traded. Oh, the unofficial start of the NBA trade season. Well, that's all we have for today, whether you were listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. We appreciate it. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send those mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you aren't subscribed already, please do so. Then you can get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. It helps our position on the iTunes charts, helps other people discover the show. And if you like the show, tell a friend about it. If you're a Heat fan, I bet you got Heat fan friends. Make sure that they're subscribed as well. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, Dave.
You got it, Wes.
Hey, it's Wes again. I wanted to tell you about the Monday Morning Heat Check. Would you enjoy getting a small email, a newsletter from me every Monday morning where I share the best stories and digital content about the Miami Heat from the week before and for the week ahead? Just a little something to keep you up to speed. There'll be exclusive content from me as well, opinions, analysis, etc., and a few other surprises that I'm still working on along the way. Again, just a little something for you every Monday morning. So if that's something you're interested in, just go to tinyurl.com/Monday Morning Heat Check. That's tinyurl.com/Monday Morning Heat Check and drop in your email. It's that easy.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.